A small plane with John F. Kennedy Jr. on board is missing. Lieutenant Tom Walker of the Coast Guard in Cape Cod says an air search is on from New York to Massachusetts.
The helicopter has a search area that's approximately 70 by 15 miles, and it will anticipate a larger area for the Falcon jet.
The plane left a small airport in New Jersey last night, bound for Martha's Vineyard, but did not arrive. CBS News correspondent Bob Orr has more.
They launched a Coast Guard rescue at around 8 o'clock this morning, Eastern Time. So if you look at the clock, that's very troubling. It could be that this plane was missing as early as, say, 8:45, 9 o'clock last night. Yet, because of the delay in notification, there was no search and rescue for nearly 12 hours.
Also on board the plane with John F. Kennedy Jr., his wife, her sister, and a flight instructor. Joe Shortsleeve of WBZ-TV Boston has talked to people on Martha's Vineyard.
There was at least one friend, either of John F. Kennedy Jr. or of one of the passengers here, waiting at the airport last night. And, of course, when the plane failed to arrive, went to the operations manager's office here and inquired about John F. Kennedy Jr.'s plane.
They were headed to Hyannisport for the wedding of his cousin Rory, a wedding that's been postponed. John F. Kennedy Jr. is 38 years old and is publisher of the political magazine George.
We now go live to a briefing from the Pentagon.
...and the Coast Guard, and to try to describe to you what each of those organizations is doing in the search for John Kennedy's aircraft. I will introduce momentarily Colonel Johnny Whitaker from the Air Force, and then we will have the Air Force Rescue Coordination Center at Langley Air Force Base in Virginia. That's down in southeast Virginia. That is where the Air Force Rescue Coordination Center is located. We will have a Lieutenant Colonel Steve Rourke, R-O-A-R-K, will be talking to you, and he will describe what the Air Force has been coordinating since early this morning. You'll be free to answer your or ask your questions through the microphones over your head. When that is done, I'll introduce Commander Mike Lipinski from the Coast Guard here in Washington, D.C., L-A-P-I-N-S-K-I. And we'll have, again on the phone, the 1st Coast Guard District Headquarters in Boston, Rear Admiral Richard Larrabee, L-A-R-R-A-B-E-E. He is the commander of the 1st Coast Guard District up there in Boston. And again, you'll have the opportunity to answer or to ask questions. You'll hear it coming through the speakers on the alphabet. So that's our intention this afternoon, okay? Any questions on mechanics before we get started? Richard. Conventional spelling. Rear Admiral Craig Quigley. C-R-A-I-G-Q-U-I-G-L-E-Y. Department of Defense Public Affairs. Ken Bacon's deputy. Okay. Colonel Johnny Whitaker is the Deputy Director of Air Force Public Affairs here in the Pentagon, and we'll start with him.
What we've got, just some basic background, and when we get Lieutenant Colonel Rourke on the phone here, he can fill in the details. The Air Force was notified. The Air Force Rescue Coordination Center is the official name of the organization at Langley Air Force Base. It's actually in Hampton, Virginia, which is just north of Norfolk in the Tidewater area. Received a call through the FAA around 3 o'clock this morning that Mr. Kennedy's aircraft was overdue, and they began their search and rescue efforts. And again, I'll let Colonel Rourke explain in detail what that will be. They're searching along the presumed flight path between Essex County Airport near Caldwell, New Jersey, and Martha's Vineyard. They're also looking around Martha's Vineyard, Long Island Sound, and the south shore of Long Island. Right now, the Air Force has involved an HC-130 aircraft, which is we use for search and rescue. It's an Air National Guard aircraft out of Gabreski Field in New York. And it is acting as the airborne air traffic control aircraft, coordinating the efforts of 15 Civil Air Patrol aircraft, which are the Civil Air Patrol is the official civilian auxiliary of the United States Air Force. It's a volunteer organization that participates in some 80% of search and rescue type of operations, mostly the search portion of the operations that occur in the United States today. With those 15 aircraft are approximately 156 Civil Air Patrol personnel. They're conducting searches from the air, over land, and along the shorelines. They're usually single-engine Cessna, Piper-type aircraft, general aviation, I'm sorry. Some are owned by the Air Force, some are privately owned. They're looking for a Piper Saratoga, which is the type of aircraft that Mr. Kennedy was flying. It's a six-seat monoplane, low wing, single engine with retractable landing gear. That's pretty much it. This is a normal procedure. The Air Force Rescue Coordination Center, the mission of that organization, it's the single agency responsible for federal search and rescue in the 48 contiguous United States. Generally, we do these in conjunction with other agencies, in this case, the Coast Guard. We also will assist with search and rescue efforts in Canada and Mexico if needed. And they are involved in another search effort currently, which is a mountain climber in Oregon. There's a missing climber in Oregon. So it's not just downed aircraft. They look for lost people, lost aircraft. They're very busy, 24-hour operation.
Colonel, this is a very widespread area you're going around. There's reports, ABC is reporting, that the plane possibly went into a dive about 19 miles off the coast of Martha's Vineyard. Does that mean you'll start pulling away from other areas if, in fact, you're getting those same reports?
Let me let Colonel Rourke address that, because he's the expert in that. In fact, let me go ahead and get him on. Lieutenant Colonel Steve Rourke, R-O-A-R-K, he's currently the director of the U.S. Air Force's National Search and Rescue School, which is at the U.S. Coast Guard Station in Yorktown, Virginia. He is the former director of the Air Force Rescue Coordination Center. He is physically in. He's personally been involved in over 1,000 rescues, search and rescue operations in his career. And Steve, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am here.
Okay, we're going to open it up to questions for you.
Colonel Rourke, Martha Raddatz from ABC. ABC is reporting today that the plane possibly went into a dive about 19 miles off the coast of Martha's Vineyard. Does that mean the search will start focusing right there and you will pull away from, say, Long Island or other areas you're searching, or will you pretty much go about what you're doing?
We'll continue on the same track that we're on, which is to search the entire area. We have nothing that absolutely pinpoints one area as opposed to another, so we can't rule out the entire flight.
Are you hearing those reports at all about 19 miles off Martha's Vineyard?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
The radar indicated that at some point that the plane may have gone into a dive?
The radar position is just a last possible position, and it's can't even be confirmed that it's the aircraft we're looking for. So, again, we can't rule out any other areas.
Colonel Rourke, Campbell Brown with NBC News. There have been reports coming from the area that possibly a shoe or some wreckage may have been found already. Can you confirm or deny those reports?
I have no knowledge of that.
Chris?
I was going to ask about the wreckage myself. But, Colonel, the radar signatures, we've heard a number of reports, as ABC mentioned, about the plane disappearing from radar. Can you say where this evidence is coming from? Is that from local radar? Is that from an area radar? Is that satellite imagery that we're talking about? And how exactly do you track when a plane leaves the radar?
Well, we work very closely with the Federal Aviation Administration and their en route traffic control centers. And these centers are primarily concerned with aircraft on IFR flight plans. However, they do have the ability to track almost any aircraft that's out there. However, they are limited by altitudes. So an aircraft going off the radar could simply have been descending to shoot an approach at an airfield, and that may be why it went off radar.
Colonel Rourke, this is Admiral Quigley here from the Pentagon again. Could you start off, please, with a description of what assets are involved and what areas you have them deployed in, and kind of as a scene setter here?
Yes, sir. Currently, we have, as Colonel Whitaker mentioned, we have 15 aircraft from five different Civil Air Patrol wings in the Northeast region. They are primarily, because they are single-engine light aircraft, sticking over the land and very close to the land, looking over shorelines and those types of areas. We have two helicopters, HH-60 helicopters from the 106th Rescue Wing, that are over the water. Since they are twin-engine aircraft, we feel safer using them over the water. And they are searching those areas, along with the HC-130, which is providing command and control and also doing some searching. That's Air Force. And then we have two helicopters from the Coast Guard, also providing overwater search, along with, my understanding is at this time, two boats from the Coast Guard out in that area.
Yes, please.
Could you please specify exactly when the U.S. government was notified of the lost plane and how long it took for the first planes to be out searching, and what were they, and how this search differs from a search of somebody who isn't a celebrity?
Well, we treat all searches the same. There is no difference between celebrity or non-celebrity. Our job is for all the citizens of the United States. And I believe it was approximately 3 a.m. local time that we got the information from the FAA that the aircraft was overdue. They had received word from family members. Our routine at that point is to start investigating, because a large proportion of these overdue aircraft do turn up simply at an airport somewhere. So we started our investigation, which turned up no results. We started working very closely with the Coast Guard at that time because of the water involvement. And I believe the Coast Guard was the first agency to launch aircraft at around 7:30 to 7:55 this morning. And then we've added aircraft as the day wore on.
Can you talk about the beacon and when that went off, and actually how it works and why we would hear it at a certain time and not others?
Certainly. All general aviation most general aviation aircraft are required to carry emergency locator transmitters, which are built to be crash activated. So if the airplane actually did impact somewhere, the ELT is supposed to go off. And then we have the ability through both satellite technology and from other aircraft that are flying to hear the beacon and try and locate it. My understanding was that there was a very short beacon heard sometime this morning, but we've heard no more about that and haven't been able to pinpoint any activity or even be assured that it's associated with a missing aircraft.
Water due to a beacon?
Well, the depth of the water would certainly make it harder to transmit. They are built to be somewhat water resistant, but I don't have all the details on that. But at certain depths, they're not going to be able to transmit.
Linda Killian from People Magazine. I just wonder if there's any information about why, when the plane was expected in about 9:30, if there's any idea why you were not notified until 3 in the morning, and how important those hours were in terms of actually finding the plane now.
Well, again, we get our notifications of overdue and missing aircraft from the Federal Aviation Administration. The only way they learned about it, since there was no flight plan filed, was through the family reporting the overdue. And as soon as they got that information, we started working it. Would it have made any difference? I don't think so, because of the night and our standard research procedures.
How long
does the reason for the four-hour delay between when you first learned of the missing plane and when the first plane went out looking for it? And am I right in understanding what you said before, that there are no additional planes searching for this particular lost plane than there would be if John Kennedy was a completely unknown person?
I've had experience in several of these searches, and it's not unusual to have dozens of aircraft searching for anybody that's missing. So this is not unusual.
What about the situation in Oregon? Are dozens of planes and helicopters looking for that person?
Actually, that person is a known location. It's a climber that was injured on a mountain up there. He has some internal injuries, and we're using, again, an Air Force reserve unit out of Portland to go pick that person up because the capabilities of the aircraft.
How long are you planning to continue this search?
I can't speculate on that right now.
I had one other question that wasn't answered before about what the reason was for the delay between notification at 3 a.m. and starting the search 4.5 or 5 hours later.
Again, I wasn't here at that time frame, but I know it does take time to research. We look at possible other landing sites and just try to gather information rather than just sending aircraft out willy-nilly. We do try to look at and do investigation and come up with a good plan rather than just sending them out helter-skelter.
Yeah, Colonel, back on assets, is that C-130 out of West Hampton Beach, the Air National Guard, up on this one?
Yes.
That's the same crew that went up in search of TWA 800, right?
That unit was involved in a search for TWA 800, and in fact, I believe they had a helicopter and a C-130 from that unit as that accident occurred.
The same unit's
up again today on this one. Colonel, what technology is being used to actually pick up the beacon signal? You'd mentioned satellites and other types of equipment that could pick it up. Do the Civil Air Patrol planes actually have transponders that could pick up the beacon, or are you using any even intelligence or satellite assets for that?
Well, there are two ways to do this. All of the aircraft involved in the search, the Air Force, the Coast Guard, and the Civil Air Patrol aircraft, have direction-finding equipment. This beacon is a very simple, puts out a signal on a specified frequency, and anybody monitoring that frequency could hear it. However, all of the aircraft involved in the search have the ability to direction-find to that signal if there was one. Now, the other part of the system is a system that's been in use internationally for coming up on 20 years now, and that's called the Search and Rescue Satellite-Aided Tracking System, which also monitors for these signals and has the ability to determine a location if the signal is heard for a long enough time.
Do you have any sense of what sort of radio communication there was from the plane during the flight? Did they check in with New York or Long Island or Boston or the Cape? Do you have any awareness of that?
I only know for sure that they did not talk to the tower at Martha's Vineyard. Along the route, they may have spoken to somebody, but not at Martha's Vineyard.
Certainly not at Martha's. They never made contact with the tower at Martha's Vineyard.
That's my understanding.
You've been searching since 7:55 a.m. this morning. Do you all have any leads? Have you come up with anything at all that's helped you narrow your search somewhat? Are you essentially right where you started this morning?
We're still concentrating on the entire route of the flight. This is not uncommon. In fact, this is somewhat of a smaller search than what we're used to. We do this all the time here. We have hundreds of overdue aircraft every year. In fact, this is smaller than what I would call the average search.
In terms of the number of aircraft involved and the time we're into right now?
In terms of the coverage, the area involved, this is has been described as approximately 1,000 square miles. It's not unusual to have missions involving tens of thousands of square miles.
And does that mean that you dedicate more assets to a search like that than you would to this one?
It would take more assets, yes.
Colonel Roark, you mentioned that no flight plan was filed. Is that normal even when the visual flight rules are in place or the instrument flight rules are in place?
That's very normal. As a matter of fact, the majority of VFR aircraft do not file flight plans.
And the weather was okay last night? Was the instrument flight rules in place last night?
I have no knowledge of that, and I'm not sure of Mr. Kennedy's ratings.
Colonel, you talk about not wanting to send planes out helter-skelter, willy-nilly, and yet those hours seem like they would be critical if, in fact, someone was down and injured. Why wouldn't you send out someone right away if that possibility existed?
Well, if there was the ability to communicate, or, for example, if this ELT was going off, any aircraft in the area, to include aircraft on approach into New York and JFK, places like that, would have heard it.
And you were made aware when you were notified at about 3 a.m. Immediately that this plane was believed to be carrying John Kennedy Jr.?
I'm not sure of that.
What exact time was the first beacon heard?
I don't know that information either.
Do you have a rough time?
No, I don't. I didn't bring that information with me.
And is there a location on this beacon signal? Early reports said that was more along Long Island. Is that accurate?
I believe that's correct. I think it was somewhere in the vicinity of Montauk.
Colonel Rourke, one of our correspondents was flying in the area that night, and whilst he said initial reports that conditions were good, it was visual flight rules, but he found that when he was in the air that it was actually very hazy and not as clear as the earlier weather reports. Do you have any indication, or have you talked to other pilots who were perhaps flying at the time, that perhaps the weather was not as good as it was originally reported?
No, I have not done that. I haven't spoken to anybody else about the weather.
Steve, if you'll stay on the line, we want to get the Coast Guard up here, and we may come back to you in a few minutes.
Yeah, but you won't hear from the speakers, because we'll need to put the Coast Guard up on this same set of speakers.
Okay. Just stay on the line.
Okay. Thanks, Sean. Okay, the next person that I'd like to address, let me address one thing first. Lots of questions on weather and other things. These are the folks that are doing the search, okay? As opposed to the weather over the flight path last night. We'll try to help you as much as we can, but a lot of the areas that I fully understand you're going to be interested in, these guys are not going to have the answers that you're looking for along those lines. I'm sorry. Commander Mike Lipinski is with the Coast Guard here at Coast Guard headquarters in Washington, D.C., and he will be followed again by Rear Admiral Larrabee, from Coast Guard District Headquarters up in Boston, 1st District. Go ahead, Mike.
Good afternoon. I wanted to let you know that I would be available afterward to talk about Coast Guard policy and to line you up with additional Coast Guard spokesmen in the field. The Coast Guard is responsible for maritime search and rescue throughout the United States, maritime regions, and typically conducts up to 50,000 search and rescue missions in a typical year. Admiral Larrabee, as Admiral Quigley pointed out, will be on the phone shortly to take some of your questions and to provide you with some information. As commander of the 1st Coast Guard District, he's in charge of Coast Guard operational assets from the Canadian border down south to offshore from central New Jersey. He controls all Coast Guard air and sea surface assets in that region, and the folks that work and answer directly to him are the search and rescue coordinators up in Boston that are managing the maritime aspects of this particular case. Admiral Larrabee, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Thank you, sir. Did you want to open with a statement, sir?
I am not in my office, I'm actually in a car on my way to my office. I'm not sure. I know you've started the press conference.
We want to break into this Pentagon briefing very briefly because we have a producer, Michael McManus, on the line with us now. He's in Woods Hole. He's got some breaking news, some updated information. Now, Michael, what have you got?
Frank, I just spoke with Captain Russell Webster. He's the group commander here at Woods Hole, Massachusetts. And this Coast Guard base is coordinating the water search off the west coast of Martha's Vineyard. And he has confirmed to me that a piece of luggage has washed up on Philbin Beach. This is the south beach on Martha's Vineyard, on the south part of the island. And a piece of luggage was found. He confirmed to me that the luggage tag had the name Lauren Bissett on the piece of luggage.
Did he tell you anything more about how long it would have taken that piece of luggage to get there, or how they're now deploying as a result?
He told me that the land patrols would be handling that part of the investigation since the luggage was found on the beach. But he did tell me that Coast Guard boats continue to patrol the area. And he also told me because of the rotary motion of the current off the west and south part of Martha's Vineyard, I guess the best way to attribute it is the current is going in a circle. And he says this is the best type of current to have in a situation like this, because anything in the water is going to flow in a circular motion and either end up on the coast or right where the plane might have disappeared. So this is the best case scenario for search and rescue.
Did he have any other information about additional debris? Actually, before you answer that question, let me just provide some background for our viewers. Lauren Bessette was said to be on that flight, the sister of Carolyn Bessette Kennedy, John Kennedy's wife. Michael, go ahead.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Frank. And the search is continuing. They have about three or four boats in this area. And he was very specific in telling me that anything found in the water would obviously be his investigative unit. And anything found on the water is police and land-based patrols there.
Before we let you go, anything else that you're picking up in your location there?
Well, I'm getting a sense of community support in this search as well. Local boats, fishermen boats, shrimping boats, they all seem to be converging on the area to lend a helping hand in the Coast Guard search for this plane.
Okay, Michael, thanks very much. We want to take you back to the Pentagon briefing, where we're told they've just confirmed this piece of information we brought to you first by our producer on the scene, Michael McManus, that a piece of luggage has washed ashore, bearing that luggage tag back to the Pentagon.
There might have been a beacon going off on Long Island. Is this something that happens fairly regularly, that you get these false beacons, if that's what it was?
Yes, it is. The 121.5 beacon that went off is typical of those types of devices. We get a high false alarm rate on those kind of devices. This was picked up by a satellite. We investigate all of those. This one turned out to be a negative signal. By the time we get out there, the signal had ceased, and there were no indications in the area that there was anything amiss.
And are there any reports of beacons being indicated in the Martha's Vineyard area, or is it just the debris?
Not to my knowledge.
Admiral, Chris Plant with CNN. You just said that there was some indication that there are reports that you had just in that luggage was found in the wreckage west of Martha's Vineyard. We're hearing that the name Lauren Bessette was on the luggage. Can you confirm that, or do you know whether that's true one way or another?
I can't personally confirm that at this point.
Is that something that you were told?
Yes.
It is something?
No, I've been told that there was some sighting of debris. We are investigating it. I can't give you any more information than that.
Is that why you're limiting the search to this particular area off of Martha's Vineyard? That's where you found the luggage, and that's why you're concentrating it there now?
This is very recent information. Up until now, we have been searching basically the track line that we suspected that that they flew last night, and we have been trying to focus our search in a much more concentrated area. Obviously, this information, along with the information from the FAA and the Air Force, will be very helpful to us.
Did the radar tracks that you analyzed to show Kennedy's plane early in its flight profile and then disappear in later tracks?
I can't answer those questions. I've been in touch with the FAA all day, and they have been working very hard at analyzing all of their radar information. The best information we have currently is that the best location they had when they lost contact with what they believe was Mr. Kennedy's plane was 17 miles west of Martha's Vineyard.
So do you have any sense of what communications were like on the flight up? The Air Force folks didn't really have a good handle on that, but said that they did not check in with Martha's Vineyard, could not say where else they may have checked in. Do you have any handle on that?
No, sir, I don't. I'm not aware of any conversations whatsoever during the flight.
Can you confirm that there were three people on board? There were some reports that there might have been four. Is it your information that it was John F. Kennedy Jr. and Carolyn Kennedy and her sister Lauren?
I can't confirm that information. Our role in this is to do the best job we can to locate survivors or debris, and that's what we're working on. I can't confirm the number of people on board.
You said you were notified by a friend or someone telling you of this missing plane. What did they say when they called about who was on?
The information that I got was the call was made at 0215 this morning to our operations center at Coast Guard Group Woods Hole on Cape Cod. That information was immediately relayed to our operations center in Boston, which got in touch with the FAA, which began this whole process.
Do you know who it was that called Woods Hole, Admiral?
I don't have the name with me right now.
Admiral, can you explain why there were 5 hours between the time that the Coast Guard first learned that the plane was missing and that the first plane went out searching for the plane?
Are you talking about the time between about 3 o'clock in the morning and 7:30?
Exactly.
Once we notify the FAA, they go through a very detailed effort to a communications check, check of airfields, check of their information as far as flight plans are concerned to determine whether or not there was, in fact, a flight and what their plan was. That was the process that was underway. We did get a call at about 0330 this morning from the Air Force Rescue Coordination Center, said that they did have an ELT go off, as I mentioned earlier, on Long Island, on land, and asked us to see if we could just, from a precautionary standpoint, check out the area along the shoreline there. We did that, and those things were going on until about 7:30 when we decided to launch Coast Guard aircraft. Now, it's my understanding that prior to that, the Air Force had launched Civil Air Patrol aircraft doing shoreline search in five of the states that potentially this aircraft could have been in.
Can you describe a little bit what that area 17 miles west of Martha's Vineyard is like and how the luggage was found? Was it just bobbing in the water and people spotted it? Or
I wish I could give you some more details, but I simply can't.
Sir,
can I interject here? Okay. All of a sudden, the wreckage that's been sighted has magically become luggage, okay? Those are not Admiral Larrabee's words. Please understand, okay, that there's been wreckage sighted, okay?
It's a piece of luggage.
Okay, Admiral Larrabee...
No, you're absolutely right. I can't confirm that it's luggage. The only information I have, and we're working on that now, is that there was some debris sighted, and we're investigating that.
Okay, as I must remind you, first reports are often wrong. Please, let's just say that we found something and we'll figure it out as quickly as we can.
Sir, if I could, if in fact this is an area where the plane went down, would it be routine to try to recover that aircraft no matter the depth of the water?
Right now we're trying to locate survivors. That would be the next phase of it. We have asked NOAA one of their research vessels to potentially get involved in this case, and at some point we may ask them to do some subsurface investigation for us. But at this point, we're still very hopeful that we're going to find survivors.
Admiral, because they did not file a flight plan, did that take longer or make it more difficult to initiate the search?
I think you'd have to ask the FAA that question. That's the role that they play in this, along with the Air Force Search and Rescue Center. We were supporting this operation until about 12:45 today, at which time Major General McKee and I agreed that because the search was now beginning to focus over the water primarily, that it would be appropriate for the Coast Guard to take over what we call the SAR Mission Coordinator, the Search and Rescue Mission Coordinator. So as of about 12:45, we have overall responsibility for the search. The Air Force will continue to provide assets and assist, but right now, because of the shift in the focus of the search, my operations center in Boston is now the SAR Mission Coordinator.
Admiral, do these helicopters you have employ any special radar technology that would allow them to hover low over the water and peer over land and maybe detect debris?
I'm not familiar with that technology, if it exists.
Admiral, can you explain if there's any difference between the search that you're engaged in now and the search if John Kennedy was not a celebrity? Is it the same kind of search?
We have deployed what we believe are the right assets to look at a very large area. It's just been in the last hour or so that we have now been able to determine that the search area may be smaller than what we originally started this morning, and we will adjust accordingly. But our efforts are consistent with the way we search for anyone that would be lost in search.
Can you provide a little context here? Tell us how many searches you're involved in comparable to this annually, and short of searches, how many calls do you get, initial calls for missing airplanes that turn out to not be an issue? And then secondly, is it normal to delay the deployment of search aircraft until dawn? Or would you, if you were fairly sure that a plane was down somewhere, deploy these assets at night?
No, we search 24 hours a day. We go through a procedure in terms of doing checks, and each case is a little bit different. I wouldn't say we would routinely get indications of overdues, but overdues are a part of our work, and we prosecute each one of those cases consistent with what we're doing now. As you progress through the phases of these kinds of cases, I think you naturally start to get more aggressive depending on the information you get, and each one of them leads in a different direction, and each one has to be handled separately.
Admiral, I'd like to have you just take a couple more questions if you could, and then we'll let you get back to managing the search.
Admiral, did the call at 2:15 a.m. come from family members on the Vineyard on Cape Cod? Where?
I'm sorry, but I can't tell you exactly where the phone call came from. All I can tell you is where it went to.
Admiral, at this point, if you have not heard a beacon going off, is it pretty much impossible that a beacon could start going off anytime soon? Would you have heard it by now if it was functioning?
I don't know the answer to that question. It is possible, I suppose, for a beacon to break loose or begin operating, but I'm not sure in this case. I am personally not even sure what kind of equipment the aircraft had on board. Still not aware of that information. So I'd be speculating to try and answer your question.
One last question, Admiral.
Admiral, are you all interviewing any witnesses? Have you talked to anyone or heard any reports that someone may have seen something?
There has been a tremendous amount of information provided on the TV and radio, and I suspect that anybody that might have had any information, as they did during TWA 800 and as they do during most of our search and rescue cases, quickly volunteer that information. I am not aware of anyone providing any amplifying information on this case.
Thank you very much, Admiral Larrabee.
Yes, sir.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's all we have for you this afternoon. We'll try to be as responsive as we can be as time passes. If any of the Coast Guard or Department of Defense assets involved in the search do find something with conviction, I'm not sure where that announcement would first be made from. Very likely it would be the on-scene assets, boat, plane, helicopter, what have you, that might find something. But let's keep our fingers crossed that we have a successful search and can find some survivors. Thank you.
It's a desperate search with fading hopes. Off Martha's Vineyard, they're still looking for John F. Kennedy Jr., his wife and sister-in-law, and their small plane. They managed to narrow the search area on the water, and all-terrain vehicles are scanning the beaches. CBS News reporter Peter Haskell is watching.
We see a host of searchers, both on foot and riding in all-terrain vehicles. They're looking for debris in an area where a number of items were found yesterday. This is a rugged, thin section of beach. The sand is probably only 25 yards wide, dotted by large rocks along the coast and jutting into the water. Beyond the beach, lush green vegetation in this small valley marked by comfortable, weather-beaten homes. It is another hazy day, and the air is getting thick. Peter Haskell, CBS News on Martha's Vineyard.
Yesterday, parts of the plane were found along with a piece of luggage and a prescription bottle. Could the trio still be alive? Coast Guard Rear Admiral Richard Larrabee hopes so, but knows they'd have to beat the odds.
Water temperature is 68 degrees. Survivability in those water temperatures has been exceeded. But I think those are only statistics.
CBS News reporter Jim Krasula is in Hampton Roads, Virginia, where a ship will head out in about 2 hours.
The USS Grasp will be leaving for the Massachusetts coast from its home base here in the Hampton Roads area of Virginia at about noon. It's expected to take a couple of days for the vessel to get up there. The Grasp has a crew of about 100, which includes several divers. Considered a salvage and recovery vessel, it's equipped with state-of-the-art sonar for underwater locating. It played a major role in the recovery of TWA Flight 800.
It's a familiar scene at the Kennedy compound, where family members are praying and hoping for the best in the midst of another family tragedy. CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnato is live in Hyannisport.
The people who have known JFK Jr. here, or at least have had some brief encounter with him, describe him as kind, easygoing, unpretentious. Carolyn Quinn is brand new here, having moved into her home across from the Kennedy compound just 2 weeks ago. She sees a larger tragedy.
You know, it's more than just an accident. It's the whole family's history of accidents and... Yeah, I mean, it really hits home. We all have families.
It was 30 years ago today the Chappaquiddick incident occurred next to Martha's Vineyard. Live in Hyannisport, Barry Bagnato, CBS News.
The former owner of the Piper Saratoga that JFK bought, Munir Hussein, tells CBS News he would have advised Kennedy not to fly.
If I'm in his place, I would not fly. If I'm VFR, no, I will never fly in that condition.
The John F. Kennedy Jr. story is big news around the world. Newspapers in London ran front-page stories. The Sunday Telegraph headlined the inexplicable curse of the Kennedys. In China, the state-run Liberation Daily of Shanghai said the incident covers the Kennedy family with a mysterious shade of tragedy.
Hope for survivors abandoned in search for John F. Kennedy Jr.'s lost plane.
The aircraft was not equipped with any survival equipment.
The nation mourns the loss.
He was what we wanted to see the continuation of Camelot to be.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Christopher Glenn, CBS News.
We offer our prayers for John Kennedy, Carolyn Bessette, and Lauren Bessette, and for their families.
President Clinton offers solace as the nature of the search for John F. Kennedy Jr.'s missing plane changes.
We are going to shift, and I say shift very purposefully, from our focus on search and rescue to search and recovery.
It fell to Coast Guard Rear Admiral Richard Larrabee to inform the Kennedy family that hope for survivors has been abandoned.
They have been very understanding all along and very appreciative of what we have been trying to do. And it was very difficult for me to share this information with them.
CBS News correspondent Lou Miliano is live on Martha's Vineyard following the search operation.
Divers had been standing by here on this island all weekend, hoping against hope to go out on a rescue mission. Now they're getting a briefing at the Coast Guard Air Station on Cape Cod, preparing for a recovery operation, heading 16 miles out into the Atlantic here off the west coast of Martha's Vineyard, where side scan sonar has picked up something on the ocean floor. The water is not terribly deep, 60, maybe 80 feet. There are 2 to 3 locations to investigate. Also heading here, the USS Grasp, with deep water capabilities to assist. But the Coast Guard is cautioning not to get hopes up of wreckage of the Kennedy plane being discovered quickly. It may take a couple of weeks, they say, to recover if they are able to find it at all. Reporting live from Martha's Vineyard, I'm Lou Miliano. Now at the Kennedy compound at Hyannisport, CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnato.
There has been nothing but silence from the grieving Kennedys. Along the shore, near their cluster of beach homes, mourners stop and gaze inside.
It's breathtaking to be here. It's truly very moving.
Kelly Cucci came from Mattapoisett, Massachusetts.
I think of the poor people inside of the compound, and I just can't imagine what everybody inside there is going through right now.
So far, this very public family is keeping the pain of this loss private. Chris?
Barry, the Kennedys have said that they don't want any special treatment in the handling of the accident investigation, but obviously they are getting it. Do you get any sense of resentment about that among the people that you've spoken to there?
No, not at all. People who've come here feel a connection, they say, to John F. Kennedy Jr. and equate his loss to that of a national leader. And they say they want all the unanswered questions about this tragedy answered, if possible. Live at the Kennedy compound in Hyannisport, Barry Bagnato, CBS News.
CBS News correspondent Drew Levinson, who's also in Hyannisport, tells us there's still been no public statement on the tragedy from the Kennedy family, but
now that the announcement has been made that this is a recovery mission, we do anticipate we're going to hear something from the family. They may still be waiting until the wreckage is recovered.
CBS News correspondent Bob Orr says divers will begin checking likely target locations today, but it could take them some time to actually find the wreck.
There are no black boxes, no flight data recorder, no cockpit voice tape like you'd have on a bigger jet. In addition, no emergency declaration, no conversations that we know of with pilots and with air traffic controllers, no real witnesses to say what they saw or what they maybe heard. This is going to depend on what they find in the wreckage.
And even after the wreckage is found, it may be difficult to pinpoint what caused the accident. Drew Steckety, a pilot who's flown into Martha's Vineyard many, many times, acknowledges that landing there at night can be tricky.
And gradually descend so slowly that your body cannot detect the descent, and then you can have a controlled flight right into the sea surface or into terrain.
The loss is being felt very strongly in Greenwich, Connecticut, the hometown of Carolyn Bessett Kennedy and her sister Lauren.
We all need to keep them in our thoughts and prayers.
I think people have respect for the family and a special way for this young couple and for Carolyn's sister Lauren.
Oh, it's very sad.
Sad indeed.